Downloading. 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
Hi, I'm Stephen Scott.
I'm Sean Preece.
And I'm Tim Schwartz.
Hey! here we are once again for another hour of technology talk. Somewhere in amongst this, we will talk about technology, I promise. I am Stephen Scott. He is Sean Preece, and he is Tim Schwartz. You know, he couldn't be any more American, guys. He even has a burger in his hand as we speak. Shocking.
Stars and Stripes, cheeseburger in hand.
Hey, what more can you want in life? Yeah, cheeseburger, fries. I'm living large, guys.
Extra large.
Extra large. Hey, I've lost some weight here. I'm ahead of two other certain radio hosts I know.
I have to say, you know, I can't really criticize you on any level regarding this. Although, I think it's fair to say that we probably should have some kind of intervention into Sean, who I believe, to date, has had 72 lamb chops from his local Indian.
That is true. How did you know that? Did I tell you that? Or have you...
You did tell me.
Are you spying?
That.
Yes, I'm up to 72.
I knew about the first 48.
But no, that is it. That is it now. That and no more. I've reached my limit. No more.
Yeah, because you can't have any more or you will die.
Oh, they are good though. Tandoori lamb chops, they're amazing. I've just found them and I can't leave them alone.
Right. Well, like I say, we are going to talk about technology. loads of stuff to talk about this week, actually. We're going to be talking about Firefox, the makers of the inaccessible browser. Only recently.
No longer.
They've sorted it. But Firefox are back with a very different kind of browser. Also, some major improvements coming to Windows, which is rather good for us. And could Apple have completely scrapped the iPhone SE 2? Ooh, I hope not. We'll get emails. Right, that's all to come on this week's Tech Talk. But first, I have something to tell you guys.
Wow, that's unusual.
Yeah, breaking news. Stephen has something to share.
Yeah, I thought I'd share. Oh, well, I won't bother then. That's fine. I'll just
come on. We are interested.
Okay, all right. Since you begged me. I've been playing with some new screen readers. Don't tell Jaws. But I have been trying out a new screen reader just because I got bored a couple of days ago and I thought, right, what will I do with my time at a spare hour? And I thought, what will I do with this hour? Now, most people would say, go for a walk, have a nice coffee, perhaps, call your mother. Well, I could have done all
those
things.
Eat a few lamb chops.
Eat a lamb chop, exactly.
All right.
But not a bad idea, in fairness. Not above call your mother, obviously. Always call your mother, all right?
Thanks.
Right, as you told. but, yeah, so I decided I would download NVDA and try it out. And I've got to say, I'm quite impressed so far. I've been spending a bit of time with it, and since downloading it and having that initial hour, where I don't know if it's because you're just in the mood and you just go for it, that you do tend to soak a lot more in. I don't know what that is, but I feel that it is a really good screen reader. Couple of things bother me about it, but generally it's good. I'd say it's almost as good as Jaws. Not quite, but almost as good as Jaws.
Wow, late review. I mean, come on, NVDA is fantastic. Let's not forget, it's free. Now, that used to be my main selling point on NVDA. It's free, but it's not anymore. It's full-featured. It works really well. No need for mirror drivers. You can run it from a pen drive. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with NVDA in the last year or so that I've tried to adopt it over Jaws. And yeah, I think you're right. Is it as good as Jaws? Maybe not. Maybe not as robust, but it's still really good. Like Sean said, the free aspect was what always got me with NVDA. It's like, well, it's free, so hey, why not? If it's bad, well, it's free, so what? That being said, once I got used to all of the features and the keyboard shortcuts, which really, for the most part, are very similar, if not identical, to JAWS. There's only one or two little things that seem to be missing that I used to use professionally with JAWS, but I don't miss them using it at home. So yeah, NVDA is really nice to use.
Yeah, I'm quite impressed by it, I have to say. I mean, it's a really nice system. I mean, the fact that it's free almost makes you think, and I think this is maybe where NVDA's success just hasn't been there yet, because if they charged for it, then I think companies would be like, I'm having that, because they would then feel that there's some kind of support level, there's some kind of, I don't know, some kind of support that isn't, it doesn't feel like that is there with a free product. And I know that this product has been, the attempt has been to make this free. But when you think about JAWS being the price that it is, and then you think about this being nothing, it's mad. But I will say this, if you are looking to get a computer and you're thinking to yourself, you know, I wonder about these screen readers, and, you know, you can get NVDA for free. You can download it onto your computer, try it out, and there's no trial. That's it. You just download it and have a go at it. Sean did a fantastic NVDA startup, which is kind of how I got into it, because I listened to that. And
eventually.
You know, in fairness to him, it was very good. Yeah, I did after, I think it was 10 years he'd done it. And I decided I'd have a listen to it. And it was good. It was really good. So check it out on the podcast. Search for NVDA when you get to our podcast. And, you know, it's really good. But anyway, I just thought I'd mention it because I do like it. The thing I didn't like so much, and I don't know if it's just maybe a voice thing, because I have noticed this before, with JAWS, even JAWS and also Apple VoiceOver, is the lag issue. If you're a touch typist and you type quickly and you have characters and words set, you don't tend to hear the characters the way that you do with JAWS. Now, what's the type of voice that JAWS uses, the original voice?
Eloquence.
Eloquence, yeah. So eloquence is the, to me it seems, is set, you know, you can hammer away at that keyboard as fast as you like and it will keep up with you. Unless it's Bluetooth, then there's a whole other story.
Yeah, the old Bluetooth lag. But yes, you can get the Eloquent Synth for NVDA.
Well, can you?
I think it's Code Factory. They do a Eloquence and Vocalizer package for NVDA.
Oh, wow.
Which is really good.
Oh, yeah, that sounds interesting.
But you do have to pay extra for that. That's something to keep in mind.
Oh, that
it's
isn't
not free.
Yes.
Yeah, that is not free. But that being said, for what the cost of JAWS would be compared to free NVDA plus, I don't know what would be, you know, in the UK, maybe 50 or 60 quid to get Eloquence installed on NVDA, it's probably worth it.
I would have thought so. Yeah, I would have thought so. Okay. Well, speaking of which, can we get the news jingle early? Get the news jingle.
News from the internet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know we're jumping ahead of ourselves here a bit, but I thought I'd bring this news in. Yeah, I'm sorry. But, you know, I thought I'd move on. We talked, I think, last week about Narrator. And we've never been really kind to Narrator, I don't think. And with good reason.
Yeah, Narrator hasn't really been kind to us, so it's only fair.
Yeah. It's never been the go-to solution finder for me. I mean, if I have problems with the computer, switching on Narrator will not be a bad idea, just to sort of maybe locate something quickly. But it's kind of one of those things that you use to sort of get to something, and then that's it. You need the big boys to kind of take you the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And that is NVDA or JAWS. However, in an upcoming release of Windows, the insider preview at the moment is noting massive improvements to Narrator. Now, I say massive because there are certain things it's going to do, and I'm not going to go through every single bit of detail here. Check it out online. This is very interesting stuff. Narrator, the standard keyboard layout, is coming. What that means is that Narrator will ship with a new keyboard layout that is designed to be more familiar to screen reader users, such as NVDA users and JAWS users. This is interesting. And I think this is playing into the hands, and I think this is important for people who perhaps use JAWS at work. My question is, what do you use at home? Because you probably don't use JAWS. Unless you've, you know, found a license key, which is a really bad idea, guys.
What are you pointing that at us for? I don't
I'm
use
just saying,
it.
Don't
direct that at us.
Piracy's wrong. But it's true, you know, and I think, you know, that, look, let's be frank about it. You know, for years, I always remember when JAWS, I think it was JAWS 9 or 10 was out, And I remember someone saying, I've got a key for it, I've got a key for it. Never worked. It was terrible. It wasn't a key. It was like a dodgy version that you just wouldn't touch. If you want Jaws, go out and buy it.
Yep.
But if you can get something that's as similar an experience at home, that's good. And at the moment, that's been NVDA. But with this, simple things. Like, I mean, one thing that stood out in this standard keyboard layout for me is the use of the insert key as a modifier key. Now, for those who don't use screen readers, you wonder what that means. Well, the sort of action button for things on your screen reader, if you want to do certain things like read text or, you know, read certain sentences or, you know, check out what a dialogue box says, you would press insert as your modifier key first. In Jaws, we call it the Jaws key. You know, in VoiceOver, you call it the VO key. ChromeVox, you call it the ChromeVox key. You know, all that kind of stuff.
There's a theme.
There's a theme developing with this, yeah. But, you know, they've now brought in this because I think before it was caps lock, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which is a bit awkward, I always find.
No, not at all. I use caps lock in NVDA. It's perfect.
You don't have to do that, though. You don't have to do that.
You don't have to, but I do because I don't have an insert key, so...
Because you are insane. Okay, but yeah, that's so. There's a whole slew of new commands coming, and when it's actually launched, I'll do a bit of a feature on it for you because I'm quite intrigued by this myself. So I'll be keen to see what they say. Automatic dialogue reading. This is good.
No, is
Stop
it?
Yawning.
Doesn't it do this already?
No, it doesn't. That's the point. But the fact is, it will do it, and I think that's going to put it back on. As a maybe a more serious option for people rather than just, you know, my first screen reader.
I'm amazed by this. I read this and I thought that it must do that already, surely. So if you're in a document and you know, Alt F4 to close it down, it doesn't automatically say, do you want to save this, yes, no, or cancel?
Not by default. I don't think it automatically reads it. You have to navigate and try to read that dialogue box. And even that with narrator isn't the easiest thing to do for anybody that's ever tried it. So the fact that it will just automatically dive into that dialogue and start reading it, I mean, it's a long time coming and it makes sense. But no, you have to actually go in and read it manually as it is now.
So it'll go through the following sequence that the experience for narrator users will be to speak the title of the dialogue box, the focused element within the dialogue box, and the static text. So, for example, if you try to close a document, like you say, Sean, in Word with unsaved changes, narrator would speak the title, Microsoft Word, the focus, save button, and then the static text within the dialogue, which would be something like, do you want to save this file? So that's something else. Find is coming to narrator. Again, these are not shocking announcements for screen reader users, but I think they will help people who are... either new to it or want a home option. Narrator Find, you now have the ability to search for text using Narrator's new Find feature. If the text is found, Narrator will move to the found item. And list of objects. This is actually quite welcome because I know Jaws has something similar to this. I think NVDA's version is better, much more like the Mac version, which is essentially when you do insert F7, on a web page, it will bring up all the links and the headings and, you know, all the buttons and everything else in a list, and you can just arrow between the different segments. You can go between links and headings and whatever else. Same on the Mac. Different on Jaws, there are different assignments. So I think F5 or is it F6 is headings. I don't really use it, but I know F7 is links, and I use that one all the time. But, you know, to be able to jump between, much better. So Narrator now has the ability to present a list of links, headings, or landmarks present in the application or content. You can also filter the results by typing in the list. Brilliant. So if you want to find, say, like I do uploads a lot to Audioboom. So as soon as I go to the Audioboom site, I want to find the upload a podcast button. So I insert F7 and type U, and it will drop me into the upload a podcast. That's what it does in Jaws. If you type upload, it won't read it. If you just type one letter, it will read the whole thing. On the Mac, it reads everything. So I assume this will do the same. Selection and scan mode. This one I'm a bit confused by. Maybe you guys will understand it better than me. Along with being able to select content in narrator scan mode using shift selection commands, you can now also select a block of data by first moving to one end of the block, pressing F9, moving to the other end of the block and pressing F10. Once F10 is pressed, the entire contents between the two points will be selected. Are we talking here about text selection, or am I missing something?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me, that if you wanted to copy a few words, a sentence, paragraph, whatever it might be, you're using those modifiers, you know, F9 and F10, maybe as almost brackets in a way, that you're bracketing that whole thing and selecting that text, similar to how you would do shift, you know, or control shift, right arrow, left arrow on other screen readers. You're just using F9 and F10 to select the beginning and the end of what you want to select, I guess.
Yeah, makes sense. You may be able to jump to a heading to another heading and then just drop the end selection and start selection and copy it all without having to arrow through everything in between, which would be nice, actually.
Yeah, it actually is a nice feature.
So that's the kind of updates that are coming. As I say, once they're out, we'll do a bit more of a feature on them, because I'd be quite keen to learn. And just maybe give Narrator another chance. It feels a bit like we've kind of dumped it a little bit in favor of everything else.
You know what? It's not the features for me. It's okay. It's fine. It slows down. It gets slower the more you use it. The responsiveness of it isn't there. If they fix that, I will use it.
So do you.
Yeah, I know, but I'm old. Well, so is Narrator. Yeah, okay.
Okay, let's talk about some other stuff that's going on in the news then. Firefox. Now, this one's rather interesting. Firefox makers are working on a voice-controlled web browser called Scout.
Oh, I'm so excited by this.
Why?
The voice-controlled, that's it. That's all you need to say.
Okay, well, should we explain what it's about then?
Sorry, do carry on.
Well, I don't know about this one. Mozilla, of course, are the organisation behind Firefox, and they're exploring a very different kind of web browser called Scout that's operated by voice rather than keyboard, mouse, or touchscreen taps. Now, this is a non-profit company, and they've revealed this project in an agenda item for an all-hands meeting taking place in San Francisco. May have already happened, actually, by the time we're talking about it. But with this app, they want to attempt to start exploring browsing and consuming content with voice. A sample command shows how it might work. Hey, Scout, read me the article about polar bears. I guess we're looking at a time where the rise of Amazon Echo, Google Home, Siri, all of these other pieces of equipment that are coming into our homes that are sort of taking over, and they're all voice controlled, mean that I guess companies like Mozilla and others will want to get their content on there, or at least make that content accessible, which for us is good, isn't it?
Of course. Now, I'm going to hold back. I'm going to let Tim have his say before I gush.
Nice.
Oh, Sean, thank you so much. Okay. No, I'm actually going to gush as well, because I agree with you that this can only be a good thing. Anything that's voice controlled that gives us the proper feedback is assumably accessible for the blind and visually impaired, and that can only be a good thing. So it seems as though Mozilla is doing what a lot of companies are doing, whether it's software, hardware. They're jumping on this whole bandwagon of voice controlled and voice operated smart devices. And for them to say, you know what, this is our product, this is what our product does by nature, but we're going to allow you to control it with voice, I think that's amazing. And it gives you the hope that someday we'll see something like this in an Amazon Echo or a Google Home, where instead of just getting blurbs from Wikipedia or something, we might actually be able to get much more detailed information from articles or websites all by voice. So I'm actually intrigued by this. I hope that it really works out for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I hate that example they gave. That's the only thing. Hey, Scout, tell me about polar bears. Terrible example. I mean, most smart assistants do that already. You can ask them, you know, like you said, wiki something or whatever. But an actual voice-controlled web browser experience would be amazing. A smart speaker, getting a web browser experience on a smart speaker would be great. They're thinking of even white goods and things like that. They're trying to get this web browser embedded everywhere, which is smart. You know, everything's being internet connected now, so it does make sense. So I think this is the way to go. Everything is going to be voice controlled. Everything is going to be wearable, and a keyboard is on its way out. Not for everything, of course, but for general ease and daily use, voice control is the way to go. And I'm so glad they've started work on this.
Yeah, I'm a little bit nervous around the idea of keyboards being edged out, because I am just getting used to myself using the keyboard to navigate the computer.
No.
The idea of not being able to do that, it's those kind of delicate tasks, those specifics. I mean, if I send a message out to my wife on my phone, if I refer to a place name, for example, a local park we have around here called Châtellerault Park.
Ooh.
If I say that, the phone... Well, exactly. The phone just doesn't know what to do with that and probably, you know, wants to shout at me for being rude. And I'm like, I'm not.
Yeah,
it's
I'm
a
afraid
name
to ask
park.
What Siri translates that into. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, you got to think about these things. And I don't think we're there yet with that kind of thing. So, you know, we can't just hand over, which is, you know, I'm just urging caution. That's all.
Of course. But it's always going to be there as the fallback. But I'm saying for mobile devices, being able just to talk to it is obviously the way you want to go. We're not there
yet.
Which
is where but we are getting there. Yeah. And certainly I would think Amazon have led the way in this. I mean, it's absolutely funny. It depends on where you are in the world, though. Because, you know, for example, in some countries, Google came first. In our country, it was Amazon that came first. So, you know, it depends where you are, depends on which side of the fence you're on. I will say, though, the cynic in me is reading this thinking, you know, there is a market share thing going on here. And, you know, this is about not just, you know, getting the product in more people's hands and being accessible and all of that. It's also that they're competing with Google Chrome.
Of course. And those statistics were incredible with the market share.
Chrome accounts for 58% of web usage compared with Firefox 5%.
Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So they have got their work cut out.
That's from analytics firm StatCounter, those numbers. They did mention, and this is interesting, though, they have talked about making the internet accessible to more people. And there is even suggestion that people, which we know this, but, you know, people who use screen readers and have other ways to access the internet, or people who have difficulties accessing the internet, could really benefit from this. The Mozilla mission is to foster, in quotes, an internet that includes all of the peoples of the earth, where a person's demographic categoristics, can't say that word, to not determine their online access, opportunities, or quality of experience. That would sound so much better read by Barack Obama, not by me. But that is a really good mission, and it sounds like this is something they're working on. And I had a little rumor a while back that Twitter were working on a way of getting their content onto the Echo. So, you know, if all these apps are now thinking, or all these companies are now thinking, right, maybe it's time to move over, that could be brilliant for us. Imagine being able to tweet from your Echo. And that's got to come soon.
Yeah, right now I think there's a couple of skills, maybe at least one skill, where you can listen to your feed of Twitter, but you can't really do much else. You can just listen to certain things in your feed. But to actually be able to send tweets, receive tweets, send messages, I think that that's a natural progression, and companies, quite honestly, would be foolish not to take advantage of this technology and move whatever platform they have. Like we're seeing with Firefox, saying, you know what, we're going to incorporate voice into our product. Twitter, it just makes sense for them to say, you know what, you can dictate nowadays, and we have this voice in these home assistants that can read back to you. So why not have our text-based service in an audio feedback type of device? So I think with companies where it makes sense, they'd be fools not to do this, because otherwise they're going to be left behind.
Well, another story that I thought we should talk about, because this one excites me like you wouldn't believe. This is Sonos have announced a new soundbar. Are we happy?
The Beam. I like the name.
Yeah, the Beam, which has got AirPlay 2 in it. It also has Amazon's, I can't see the word, Lady A, and coming soon, Google Assistant as well. And we just read this week that Sonos's CEO, try saying that after a few, hasn't ruled out adding direct Siri integration into the company's speakers.
Never going to happen.
I don't know.
I don't know. That article that we were looking at, it really makes it sound like they have a nice partnership with Apple and that they are negotiating this. The CEO of Sonos is really interested in doing that. So just to take it that step further from just having AirPlay 2 where you can stream it to the Sonos device, yet actually have Siri built in. You imagine a device that has what I guess would be considered the top three, if you want to include Siri in there, the top three home, you know, devices and assistant devices all built in the one system. So you don't have to worry about which one you have already. It's already built in and you just pick which one you use and go on. I think it's fantastic news that they're doing this. Not just having the others available, but maybe even getting Siri in addition to the AirPlay 2. This is good news.
Well, here's what it's saying. With the rollout of AirPlay 2, Sonos is teasing Siri support, but it's not direct integration of any kind at this point. When Sonos says Siri support, what it means is that you can use Siri on your phone or iPad to control playback on the speaker, which is a feature of AirPlay 2. However, when the CEO was asked about Siri coming directly to Sonos speakers, the CEO explained that it's largely up to Apple and whether or not it decides to open Siri up to third parties, something Sonos has been talking to Apple about. So they're keen to do it. It's all down to Apple. And will they go down that route? I don't know. But what is interesting, though, is there's a couple of announcements from Sonos, including the AirPlay 2 support, not just for the Sonos Beam, which is the new soundbar, but also for Sonos One, I believe, as well. That's going in there. Also, in an interview with The Verge, Sonos CEO Patrick Spence talked about the company's relationship with Apple. The Sonos One, of course, was the company's first speaker with direct integration of a voice assistant, and that was Amazon's Echo software, Alexa. Sorry, I've said it, but there you go. And Google Assistant.
How dare you?
And Google Assistant support coming this year as well. I mean, what's interesting about this is you've got the HomePod, and the HomePod has got AirPlay 2 now. It's got Siri, of course, in it. But I wonder if that's enough to make people want to go out and spend the money. What we're talking, £319 for the HomePod, where you can get the Beam, which is a soundbar which connects to your television, and ultimately, or you know, you could have it as the centre of your house and the beginnings of your Sonos setup, I guess, for £399. That makes me think, why would I spend the money on a HomePod?
Exactly. There's no competition there at all. The HomePod is so limited. Okay, it's got great sound, but so's the Sonos. We haven't heard this Beam yet, but I'm assuming it will have great sound being Sonos. So there's absolutely no competition. There's no way it's going to get Siri. Apple will not open Siri to third party at all. That will not happen. The only way that will happen is when Apple buy Sonos.
Ooh. Well, and that's never out of the question for them to buy somebody up like that. But that being said, I agree. I don't think that Apple will ever open up Siri that far. Even just giving AirPlay 2 was kind of a surprise, quite honestly. But I think that that's their concession is, you know what? We'll give you AirPlay 2 so that people can use the soundbar and use their iPads and iPhones and stream it to the device. And that's probably where they're going to draw the line. That being said, I think you're right, Stephen. For the extra money, you might as well buy the Sonos. I mean, the HomePod right now, it's still not feature rich enough for me. I mean, there's no skills or apps per se, you know, like Echo and Google Assistant have. There's a lot of other features that it just doesn't have. And that's not even getting into that Siri, even though they're working on it, it's just not smart enough compared to the Echo and the Google Assistant. So they've got work to do. I mean, there are things that I think Apple could do to make HomePod competitive enough where I might say go with the HomePod for the lesser money over a Sonos or something else. But right now, as it stands, yeah, I would spend the extra money and go with the Sonos.
If you don't have a soundbar at the moment at home and, you know, you're thinking, what would I... You know, because I think people think soundbar, it's attached to your TV and that's it. And no, it's not actually. I mean, that can be the center of your home. This thing is built for small to medium houses. I think most people live in a small to medium house, I would imagine. I do.
Yes.
So, you know, yeah. I can't imagine people living in, I don't live in a mansion that requires the sound to be ridiculously loud. But you can, what I like about it is you can add to it, but it's entirely your choice. And you might find, you know, like Sean says, we haven't heard this yet. Generally, Sonos is good. The only thing I'll say about Sonos, the only caveat I'll bring to this is that Sonos once brought out a speaker called the Play 3. They had to play one and you had to play five. Play one, great. And if you doubled them up, fantastic. Two play ones sounded amazing. Play five, incredible. Put two of them together, which is what I've done, and it's incredible. Play three, awful. Terrible thing, and they've shelved it by the looks of it. And if they haven't shelved it, they should be shelving it. But I've noticed it's not in any of their new marketing. So I think they even realised whoever made that had a few the night before. Not great at all, if I'm honest, to Play 3. But then it was meant to be, I think it was built to be like a centre speaker. I think that was the idea of it. Never really one that was meant to be a standalone speaker.
Right. But that's the thing with Sonos, isn't it? You can actually build the system up.
Yeah. gets a bit complicated after a while. So what are you actually buying, you know?
Yeah.
But you can use them in any way you like. I mean, I've got Play One in the kitchen, but that could easily be part of another Play One that could sit in the living room as rear speakers. You know, it depends how you want to do it. Yep. But I kind of like it for that. And this integration is fantastic. Really, really impressed. Hate to be down on Apple twice here. HomePod, after the Sonos thing. But Apple may have scrapped the iPhone SE 2. Sorry!
No! I know, that just crushes you, doesn't it, Stephen? You were really hoping for an SE 2.
I was so excited about it. I thought, this is it. I'll get my SE 2 this year. Although, I think I actually can take the blame for this one. I think it's all my fault. I think
of course. Tim was listening to you.
I know Tim listens. Tim Cook, he says, listen, I must check. I know I'm a busy guy and I've got a company to run and, you know, I've got my $1 trillion to count. But I think in amongst all this, he listens to Tech Talk. And he's been listening to me because do you remember I said on the show that the iPhone SE was the BE phone, the blind edition iPhone?
Yeah.
And then I said, well, actually, do you know what? Come to think of it, I think now of maybe the iPhone 8, because a lot of friends of mine who've got the iPhone 8 say it's much better, nice form factor, nice size, amazing sound. So that's become the BE, the blind edition phone. And I think Tim's listening going, do you know what? Stephen's right. Scrap the SE because, you know, no one wants it. So sorry, guys. It's all my fault.
Oh, okay. Well, look, how much substance have these rumours got? We don't know what's going to happen. 1 minute it's here, next they're going to announce it at WWDC. Now it's not coming at all. Nobody knows.
Yeah, when you get rumours like this where it's coming out of, you know, the production lines where they're rumoured to not be making the parts that would, you know, be equal to what an SE2 would be, well, how do we know what the SE2 would be? So you have to kind of take some of these rumours with a grain of salt because, well, we don't know. It may not be the same form factor, the same screen size. They may not use the same parts. They may model it after an iPhone 7 or maybe an 8 or as we've teased, it could be after the 10, you know, and have an SE 10, which would be interesting.
An SEX. Oh, that would be funny.
That's what I was implying without saying it. Yes, thank you, Stephen. you'll go there, yes. So, yeah, you just don't know what that form factor is going to be. And I mean, is it possible that they say, yeah, we're just not going to do this? Maybe. But I also thought that Apple was liking the idea of having, you know, they've got their really, really high end that they did with the iPhone 10, although I don't know that they'll do that again for that price. They have your regular, you know, phone line. And then they had that lesser expensive phone line with the SE, and that made them have kind of a small, medium, large kind of, you know, ecosystem there for them. And I thought that worked well, but maybe they're coming back and saying, nope, you know what? We just want to go back to high end. We don't want to have this lower end, you know, lesser expensive. I don't know.
I don't know where the form factor fits in anymore. That's the only thing. I don't know if that screen size is viable now. People are moving away from that. I know they were when the SE was released anyway, but I don't know if that form factor can exist. That doesn't mean, what is the SE? What is the, why do we love it? Is it because of the form factor, just that? Or is it because it's got that performance at that price point?
I think it's all the above. I think it's the form factor, the screen size, the price point, especially, you know, for especially people on a fixed income. That being said, even people that I know that are blind or visually impaired using the SE have said just what you said, that they like it. It's a great form factor. It's a great price. But they find that even though they might have liked the screen size at the time, they're now finding that they like the larger screen size for that extra real estate. Even if they can't see the screen at all, they're liking the idea of having more real estate on the screen to navigate. So maybe that smaller screen isn't viable anymore. I don't know.
Well, this report comes from Olixar. This is a company that make phone cases. So how reliable is it? Yeah. Well, they're saying that they're working on cases for a 5.8-inch iPhone 11, 6.5-inch iPhone 11 Plus, and a 6.1-inch iPhone 9. You know, Apple have got to get these numbers sorted out. This is ridiculous. Okay, well, listen, that's the news. Get in touch with us if you've got a story or something you want to say, because goodness knows we do, then get in touch, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Right, before we get to emails, a couple of things. I should have done this at the top of the show, but I forgot. But I've remembered now, so it's fine.
Professional.
I've never said I'm professional. Please do not. You know, the people who work here at RNIB, and you know, who do wonderful jobs every day, I don't know how I stand among them. I have no idea, honestly. But here we are. So last week on the show, I got a little bit critical of Lexmark. And, you know, I was listening back to the show last week because, you know, I like to listen to myself. And I thought I was a bit hard on Lexmark.
Did you get an email from Lexmark by any chance?
No, I didn't. No, no. I don't think they listen. I think Tim listens. But no one's commented, nothing like that. But do you know that way I just thought, I think sometimes if you say something and you think it was a bit too far, or you maybe just said over, maybe got felt a bit over the top, you should say, and I did. So I apologise to Lexmark because, you know, I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression. But when I was thinking about it, I thought, you know, I'm saying these printers are terrible. And, you know, they weren't the greatest experience, but then at that time, those all-in-one printers that you got were pretty much all terrible. And, you know, they all had their issues. I've never really had a printer that I can think of that didn't have a problem. And I was thinking about it afterwards. I had HP printers, I had Epson printers, and they always had jams and faults and problems. And it was always when you needed to use them most, that's when they'd fail.
Yes. I think it was... Everyone was going for that price point, wasn't it? I mean, at that time, you could get printers for £30-40. You still can. But at that time, that's what they were going for. And it's very much a throwaway. As soon as that ink's gone, throw it away. Yeah. So, to be honest, I thought you were a little bit harsh on Lexmark because you could make the same arguments against, as you said,
any of them.
Epson, HP, all of them.
Well, and the thing is, nowadays, Lexmark, as we talked about, has gone to a professional line printer. I don't even know if they make personal home printers anymore. If they do, I haven't seen them. Yeah, it's just professional line office printers that they're making, which is what we were talking about. And, you know, I can only speak from my experience way back long time ago, when I was getting my degree, I was working at a local, here in the States, Best Buy, big electronics box store. And I was in the computer department there. And from my experience, and this is where I was coming from when we talked about this, when we would sell printers, the returns that we would see were mostly Lexmarks. We saw very few Canon, very few HP, very few, you know, any other brand.
Right, you're making it worse.
I know I'm making it worse, but I'm trying to explain my point of view but that was, again, 20 years ago when I was doing this. So I don't
know
where they
come in 20 years. Tim will be apologizing
next week. I'll be apologizing next week. No, but my point is that in 20 years, they've gotten out of the personal printer business. They're in the business of doing it for a professional line. And again, it was 20 years ago that we're talking about of our experiences with these. So, you know, back then, they weren't the best. But are their professional line printers good now? Very well could be. And they have accessible feedback in them. So that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, and that's what kind of annoyed me. I get up in my comments a bit because I thought, you know, hang on, these guys are putting effort in here. And I'll stand up with any company that does that. Because the fact is they're the only company that I know of that are bothering to even think about accessibility in those products. So good for them. And, you know, they'll never hear this and they'll never care. But, you know, I just thought I'd say it. Also,
Well done.
Also,
taking
good
ownership.
On you.
Well done.
Yeah, next absolutely. Week we'll get an email from a blind person that works at Lexmark to let us know for real. Yeah.
We're so sorry.
Yeah, I can't help my mouth. It runs away. If only there was some way to edit this program. So the other thing I wanted to bring up was the Extra podcast last week because I'll take the hit on this one because it was my fault.
It was you, yes.
It was me. So last week we had the Extra. For those of you who were so excited, and I know you were, you know, oh, more from Tech Talk. Fantastic. I can't wait. And then heard the entire show again. Apologies. Yes, I hit the wrong button on the wrong file when I did the upload to the podcast. And guess what? The wrong file went up. So it's been fixed. It was fixed the next day. Thank you to everyone who emailed in. There was a few of you. So thank you for pointing it out. I'm really glad you did. And you know what? It was kind of nice in a way because I know that you're all listening and it's lovely. So thank you for getting in touch.
It was a test. It wasn't an accident. He did it on
purpose.
Exactly.
It was just checking. Checking you were listening.
Just to make sure people are listening. And we do this wonderful, nice thing, get all this extra content out there, and then you just don't get it there. It's all good.
Yeah, it was a secret. We could have kept it as a secret, like a mystery episode.
Yeah, we should have had people email in a special keyword or
the lost
buzzword from the episode.
Send the password to this email address, yeah.
The password is.
Yeah. Well, let's move on because I do want to get to your emails. Fire up the jingle then, come on.
Email, we get email, we get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Oh, I love that little jingle. Right. Let's get into your emails. Now, this first email is from Matthew. Now, Matthew Clark got in touch with us a while ago. You might remember he was telling us about his issues with access to work. Not so much access to work, I don't think, but more about the company or the place he was working for were just not really fully getting his accessibility needs. And was there anything he could do? He had the Surface Pro, if you remember, and he was having issues with Zoom text on it, and he wanted to use his Mac at work. You remember this, don't you guys? This email came in, it was a few weeks ago.
He was getting so frustrated because he couldn't get productive with the equipment he had.
Well, he's emailed in. I will say this is a long email, so settle down. This is, you're not going to hear what it sounds like for someone's retinas to die. So this is me starting to read this email. And what I love is he started the email saying, "My email will begin in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. He says, "Dear Tech Talk, what an exciting episode you've had recently. As a young man who likes to look professional, my adoration of video games is often somewhat closeted, especially because sight loss does make them often so hard to play." He says, "I'd like to share with you several ways that I play video games." Thought this would be interesting for you guys. "I own an Xbox One. I regularly use the built-in magnification commands to help me read in-game maps or sometimes text, though I cannot see colour. If colour contrast is the issue in a game, just get out your TV remote, go to the settings, turn down the TV's colour until everything is black and white. This is how I follow flight paths in Just Cause 3, where it is just so much fun shooting up a tropical island dictatorship."
Okay.
He says, "I also game on my computer, in this case, of course, a Mac. Hurrah! What a wonderful thing about gaming on a Mac versus Windows, I've found, is the built-in zoom magnifier. I've found zoom commands and functionality always work within games on the Mac. This never worked with Windows Magnifier or Supernova when I used to own a Windows machine for personal use. For any magnifier that works and is used in a game, though, it would be essential it wasn't resource heavy, so the gameplay isn't slowed down. Zoom on Mac certainly is not power hungry, but as the gentleman from Dolphin said recently, Supernova certainly is. The shame here is, obviously, many games made for Windows are not ported to the Mac. I enjoy city builder titles. City Skylines is by far the greatest, and the historic campaign Total War series in particular on my Mac. On Xbox, I do share a love for GTA with you, Stephen. I have been able to complete the game on the easiest settings and with total reliance on the option to auto-aim all your weapons." Auto-dimming them would be pointless again. "I also still have plugged into my TV a beautiful old Nintendo GameCube." Wow. "Older games are simpler, and on a big modern TV, the text is so much larger, as they were designed for screens a decade or more ago with much lower resolution. Here I enjoy Sims titles, Mario Kart naturally, and an old childhood favourite, Pokemon. Now, when I was younger, I did own a Nintendo Game Boy and a Nintendo DS, only to play Pokemon. Simple game layout, and not bothering to read much text made it relatively easy to play, though I would supplement this with a magnifier whenever needed." He says, "On to the more serious stuff now. Working hard. This is something I've been able to do somewhat better in the Scottish Parliament since my last email to you. Unfortunately, this isn't as yet with any thanks to Access to Work, who are still floundering about like a crazy person. But the Surface Pro given to me at work by the Parliament does meet Dolphin's recommended system requirements, so I would, with sadness, like to point out that for me, the positive experience some guests and writers have shared about Supernova is not something I can fully support. I had patience with Dolphin and Supernova once, but it will take a lot more than that very good interview you had a few weeks ago to change my mind. What has saved the day at work for me now is my MacBook. Yes, having to use a personal device at work, at least they'll let me, which is good news, and Microsoft Office 365 to be precise. The Scottish Parliament and many workplaces are now using Office 365. It turns out that this allows every employee to have cloud storage and use of the Office apps online, and more importantly, on up to 5 devices. Devices can include your work PC, your iPhone, your iPad, other smartphone, personal Windows or Mac PC. Office apps are available for them all. Accessibility within the Mac, Word and Outlook apps seem pretty solid from my experience to date too. But for me, what has been so wonderful in recent weeks is just turning on a computer at work that lets me work and being able to use emails and files just like anyone else can. It has been empowering and blissful. Whether with my Mac or once Access to Work evolves into something better, I look forward to the better experience at work continuing. You reading out my previous email, everyone commenting on it, talking about it, and caring has meant so much. I was in a real place of desperation before. So thank you, Tech Talk Nation. Let's keep the conversation about making technology in the workplace more accessible and productive going. FAB, Matthew Clark.
Wow. Wow, what an amazing email, and I'm so glad you're getting there with work. That's just great.
That's amazing news that Matthew is saying that his workplace is actually letting him use his MacBook and bring in personal devices like that, and then having Office 365 and allowing him to use that again on a personal device. That's actually a big deal, because a lot of employers wouldn't necessarily do that. They want to lock everything down and make everything private and, you know, behind a firewall or whatever. And so for them to say, you know what, for accessibility, not just for him, but it sounds like for anybody at his company, they're allowing him that accessibility. To be enabled in that way rather than being disabled is so empowering. It gives you that, like he was talking about in his email, that feeling of independence is so important, to be able to just sit at a computer and do not just your personal things, your, you know, fun things like the games he was talking about, but to sit down and do his work and have it be accessible and be just like anybody else. That's very important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, Matthew, thank you so much for that. It was a long email. I am struggling for it, but I'll live. But I do thank you for it, because it means a lot that you got something out of this experience. And, you know, I know you're an avid listener, so great. Another email that's coming on the subject of gaming, actually. Tony got in touch. He says, hi, guys, to all the Tech Talk crew. He says, as an avid gamer, I just thought I'd give you some thoughts regarding the accessible gaming chat you had with James Kyle in a recent show. Nintendo's newest console, Switch, has become inadvertently a real game changer, pun intended, when it comes to playing games with limited vision. My partner Robert has limited vision, and the Switch has really helped him play full console games that he wouldn't be able to see if sitting on the sofa playing on the television. As the Switch can be played on TV as well as handheld, he can take it out of its dock, hold it where he can comfortably see the screen. Seems like Nintendo are trying to shake their more family-friendly kiddie image as of late. And as well as your usual Mario Kart and Zelda, there's also more mature titles like L.A. Noire and Doom 2016 that you'd usually never see on Nintendo platforms. Unfortunately, no way to change the font size yet, which is a real missed trick, of course. Microsoft are also launching an accessible controller as well, called the Adaptive Controller, which is for the Xbox and a first for a mainstream gaming console manufacturer. It's got ports allowing you to plug in customizable inputs for any of the buttons. Probably not very useful to visually impaired or blind gamers, but excellent news for the disabled community as a whole. Hopefully this leads the way for more adaptions in gaming. I really enjoyed the show. Thank you, Tony.
Well, thank you, Tony.
So there you go. He's from Glasgow. Yeah, that's a really nice email. And it's always interesting to hear people's experiences of these things, because, you know, there are ways and tricks, like Matthew's talking about. You know, there are ways to get the job done sometimes, and it might not be as obvious as you think. So some really good ideas. I didn't realize there was as much accessibility in the consoles. I guess it's just the games I find difficulty with, although I didn't realize you could sort of use those adaptations in the games as well. I find that interesting.
Yeah, I gotta say, Microsoft are doing great work. After everything I've said so far, I think they are doing great work in accessibility, and they're communicating it really well as well. Their accessibility team are great. So, you know, this going back to the controller, yes, it's not much interest to the visually impaired, but still, it's a step in the right direction.
Can I also just say a big hello to the guys who actually do all the support work on Microsoft through the Be My Eyes app? I think this is something we don't talk about enough, but if you download the Be My Eyes app, which you've maybe heard us talking about, you've maybe heard friends talk about, this is the app that gives you sighted assistance through your smartphone. You can now get Microsoft support through that app as well. So when you get the button that comes up, if you're using VoiceOver, you'll hear the button, call first available volunteer. Well, if you swipe right on that, you'll get Microsoft support as well. I think they call it specialized help. And you go in there, and there's a Microsoft option. There's also Be My Eyes will have help teams as well if you're having issues. But for example, say something pops up on your screen, you don't know what to do with it, then you can actually use the Microsoft support side through Be My Eyes to get that help. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, great move. And they do a good job with that as well.
Okay, another email then from Paul, who got in touch. He said, "Hi guys, I look forward with much interest and anticipation to receiving my podcast every Tuesday. Keep up the good work, they are great. After listening to you and a few other members of the Tech Talk team talking about the SanDisk Wireless Connect drive, I decided to buy one. That's where my problems started."
Oh dear. Uh-oh.
Right, what have you done, Tim?
You bought it first. It's your fault.
Paul says, "I managed to get the stick to connect to the Wi-Fi okay. Then I downloaded the Connect Drive app, hopefully the right one. Then when I go back to open the app, it says, 'Success, you have connected to your stick.' And then the only other thing on the screen that will read is page 1, page to page 3, page 4. But there is no content on them. There is no other patterns that are accessible on the page. What am I doing wrong? Any advice from you and your wonderful team would be more appreciated to save me pulling out what little hair I have got left. Best regards, Paul McCallum."
We've all been there.
Well, Paul, I wouldn't get too discouraged quite yet, because the SanDisk Connect is a really nice device once you actually get it up and running and working. The first thing I would check, even though it does say that the stick is connected to the app, double check and make sure that it really truly is the correct app. Now, that being said, there is a couple of SanDisk apps available. I actually at first did download the wrong one, and I got an alert prompt saying that it was the wrong one, and it directed me to the correct one. So you probably have the right one, but I would double check that first just to be sure. And then check your Wi-Fi settings, because you do actually, even if you're at home on your own Wi-Fi or some other Wi-Fi network, it will need to be switched, the Connect device that is, to its own internal Wi-Fi. So you will want to go into the Wi-Fi settings of your phone and make sure that you have selected and connected to the SanDisk Connect's Wi-Fi. If you've done that and you've got the right app installed, it should come up. Even if you haven't put any content on the stick at all, it does come preloaded with some test images and some videos. I know when I first started it up, it just had some very basic music. There was like 5 music tracks, I think, a couple of videos, maybe, or one video, a couple help files, just text documents in there on how to use the device. So all of that is there. That's another point too. That's how I actually found to use some of it, is that there is a help file on it. So if you plug it into your computer and just go to it like you would any other drive, you can navigate to that help file and take a look there, see if you can get an additional help or support there. But yeah, I would check the app and check the Wi-Fi connection. Stephen, can you think of anything else that might be causing a problem?
No, I mean, I think it is about checking you've got the right app for a start. It is the SanDisk Connect app that you're looking for, the SanDisk Connect drive. And once you've got that downloaded, I will say, though, there's one thing I will say about it. I just have gone into it while we're talking here, and mine obviously has updated to some new features. Now, I don't have the SanDisk Connect drive. You may remember in a previous episode, I did buy this for my wife. She's probably lost it by now. I don't know, but hopefully not. But if I can find it, we'll put something together for you and maybe help you along with it. Because I remember at the beginning, I thought there was a few question marks around the accessibility of the app. But maybe instead of swiping, you might want to use your finger and scroll around the screen. The focus might be jumping to the bottom of the screen. That's the only thing I can think of at the moment that kind of rings a bell for me. So check that out. And as I say, we can tell you more about it next week if you'd like. Let's go to Riz, who also got in touch as well, or Android Anorak. And that will become clear as to why I say that in just a moment. He says, "Dear Stephen and guys, a special hello to Tim and Sean."
Oh,
Over the past few weeks.
Hello.
Yeah, how nice. "Over the last few weeks, I've been listening to the program. People have been saying that they've been struggling with the eBay app. As luck would have it, I have a solution. The solution is simple. Buy an Android phone."
Oh. That's his solution to everything.
Of course he would say that, yeah.
"Well," he says, "my wife needed something just today, and I thought it would be a good time to give the eBay app on Android a test. I was able to check out without any issues, and my wife's goods will be on the way soon. I thought I would apologize for my moment of smugness, but then thought better of it. It's all just for fun. Hope nobody minds." Email in from Riz. Thank you for that, Riz.
No one minds, Riz. It's all in good fun.
It is all in good fun, yep.
Yes, it is. Right, on to Simon's email. "Hi to the gang," he says. "I was recently looking at Cero, and the subscription was $6 a month, but when I looked at the App Store, they wanted £6 a month. as of writing. $6 is £4.50. So what happens to the other £1.50? You could be buying KNFB Reader, which costs $100, and you would pay £100, meaning that because the currency had not been converted, you'd be paying an extra £25, as $100 equals about 75. What do you think? Are we being overcharged?
Yes. Yes, I agree with that. I see that all the time when I'm looking at conversions from different stores or even app stores or Amazon or any other online store between the UK and the US. It always seems to be either same price or more, well, same number or more in the UK. And when you do that conversion, sometimes the same product can be twice the amount of money when you convert it in the UK than it is in the US. And I don't understand it. I don't think that's right. And definitely not fair.
What do we do about it, though? There's nothing we can do, is there? I mean,
Stephen, get on the phone with Donald Trump and make it happen.
Okay, I'll do that right after the show. Although, in fairness, you live closer, so it might be easier for you.
Yeah, but you're closer friends. So.
Oh, I see. Oh.
You could share cheeseburgers.
Oh, it's always with the food on this show. Right, well, listen, that is it for us. Thank you again for being with me, Sean and Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
We are obviously online, and we, you know, do go and check out our extra podcast that we did last week. It is now there, I promise you. If you're having issues with the podcast, what I found was if I deleted the what I did actually was I deleted the old post and then put a new post up, so it should have sorted itself out in your list. If it hasn't, then do let me know by email and I'll send you the link to it. But if you do want to get in touch with the show, maybe you've got something you want to say, you want to share or whatever, then please do get in touch with us. You can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk at any time. You can do that and get in touch with us. Coming up, we are going to be talking more about NVDA and ChromeVox as well, because this week we've all been trying out, haven't we?
We have, to mixed results.
Yeah, we'll have to see how this goes.
You know, it's easy for me to just go, yeah, a lot of nonsense, but that's because I'm lazy. Yeah, that is because I'm lazy. And actually, I think it's time we gave it a proper rundown. So I might, by next week, have a little review of my thoughts on ChromeVox and some experience for people who want to try it out.
Look forward to it. Yeah, that would be impressive.
So that's the plan. So yeah, check it all out. You can find us on Audioboom, iTunes, any of the podcast providers that you use or wherever you get your podcasts. Search for RNIB Tech Talk, and that's how you can subscribe to us. And there's lots more content on there as well. If you go to the feed, you'll find lots and lots of other interviews that come from shows across RNIB Connect Radio. Search for them all there by searching for RNIB Tech Talk. That is it from us, though. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you again next time for another Tech Talk. Cheers, guys.